Welcome to the Industrial IoT Spotlight, your number one spot for insight from industrial IoT thought leaders who are transforming businesses today, with your host, Eric Walenza.
Welcome back to the Industrial IoT Spotlight podcast. I'm your host, Eric Walenza, CEO of IoT One, the consultancy that helps companies create value from data to accelerate growth. Our guest today is Laurent Laporte, CEO of BrainCube. BrainCube is an IIoT platform suite with business and expert apps that's designed for manufacturing. In this talk, we discuss the uses of advanced algorithms combined with prescriptive insights to optimize production processes at the batch or even at the unit level. And we also explored the purpose of an IIoT platform in addressing the challenges that IT and OT leaders are facing as expectations increase for high quality, low lead times, and predictive visibility. If you find these conversations valuable, please leave us a comment and a five-star review. And if you'd like to share your company's story or recommend a speaker, please email us at team@iot1.com. Finally, if you have an IoT research, strategy, or training initiative that you'd like to discuss, you can email me directly at erik.walenza@iot1.com. Thank you.
Laurent, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today.
Hello, Eric. I'm here in France in the cold winter and very happy to talk to you.
I was looking on your website at the chateau that your headquarters in. Quite beautiful and really quintessential French tech company, right? But where are you sitting today?
I'm nearby a biggest chateau. I'm in Versailles, where we have the chateau of Louis XIV, the king of France. And we have our sales offices for Europe here. So I was working this week with the team here to set up our new season, I would say.
Okay, well, that chateau is a little bit more expensive, I imagine.
Yeah. But our chateau was a good story. You know, it was an opportunity. When you grow fast, you have to change your offices every 2 years in every region. And this was the opportunity to have a really nice place where we can build around. We have a lot of lands, and it's inside the city we want to live in. So we're pretty happy about this.
Okay, very nice. Yeah, tell me about the development story here, because you set up BrainCube in 2007, and as I understand, you and the other two founders are all coming from an operational background. And so that was a pretty ambitious time to be setting up an IoT platform, right? Because cloud was just being adopted at that time. What's the founding story of the company?
The story started probably in 1990, because I entered in one of the most renowned French engineering university named Henri Métier, which has been founded by Louis XIV again. So it's a long history. And I had a first career in manufacturing, and I've been passionate by production system. During this career, I met my two buddies, Helen and Sylvain. Sylvain was working in systems, and Helen were more on the business operation side. So we had this first 15 years of experience working in the manufacturing business in different countries. I did run some plants in the USA, in Italy, in France, in Finland. So we were all about production. And the early stage of our first idea was two things. The first is internet looks like to be a connector. And there was no connection between the plants, the suppliers, inside the plants, you know. We didn't have any technology speaking, any connection between the different actors. And the other thing was we were starting to use more and more data for problem solving with a Six Sigma approach. But we were very frustrated about it because data collection was manual, long, data cleaning was not existing, and the way to use this data were pretty old. We were using the statistical study, and it's a technology that started in 1936. So the first idea of this, before cloud, before IoT, and you can see connectivity, IoT, we had this idea, and it was to leverage the fact that it's easy to build a website for developing data analysis technology coming from Six Sigma mindset, to solve faster problems, to be always in condition of analysis. This was the first idea back in 2005. And we started to build a platform. And we started to build this, what we were calling websites. And we started to push data there from any sources we could get. And we started to do some visualization, data transformation, multi-factor analysis, something like this. So the early days of BrainCube was really a numeric transformation of Six Sigma by an automation of the data collection. And coming back to the cloud was not really existing. IoT was not existing. Big data was just emerging. The cloud was for us a trick because we didn't have to develop a very complex software at the beginning. We developed just website, and we could make modification by ourselves very quickly, and we could have a version a day if we needed some corrections. So the idea was to use internet first because it was easier to develop software, and later it was because we could share the power of computation. And then that's where we entered the cloud a few months later, where we discovered that we could now massively upload data, but to be able to do something with them, we needed a giant power computation. And the only way to do this is to do a cloud scalable infrastructure. There were some choices at the beginning, but there was and choices made with a vision. And there was other things like that we discovered on the way that was advantageous that showed up for us because we probably had the chance to go on the way of the cloud technology, and the cloud become big, and so it become very helpful for us.
Yeah, I'm curious what that first version of the product looked like. Did you already have the vision for a more integrated, platform, or was it more an individual application that you started with? What was the starting point?
Yeah, it was a platform, really a platform, where we were receiving data from file exchange system, I would say. We were generating files at the plant level, and they were pushing with a protocol, transfer protocol, the files into their dedicated website. We were having three applications. We would call them Learn, Think, and Act. And the idea was Learn was a visualization module. So you can visualize, centralize information, making some charts and graphs, simple. Think was a very specific module where we were doing only multi-factor analysis. We're taking a long time of computation, but it was really where we had the first value of BrainCube. And the Act was just a live dashboard where we were helping the customer to use the finding they get through visualization or analysis.
I see that you like the simplicity of these steps. So today what I see is on your approach, connect, manage, improve, transform, but probably with a lot more depth than you had in that initial version. Can you give us, before, maybe not getting into the technical details now, but you can give us a high-level walkthrough of the different aspects of the product and the value proposition behind them?
In the early days, really the early days, we were all about problem solving because we're coming from Six Sigma. So the idea was to reduce any type of variability by identifying the factor we should control to kill this variability that was the cost most of the time. So we were having typical project like a reduction of energy, say saving energy, increase of speed of equipment, try to reduce or eliminate some defect or reject, try to reduce the consumption of some of the key elements inside the product to make them less expensive. That's what we were doing. We were all about reducing variability. But when we started to sell that, and it has a lot of value because we were helping customers to solve crises or to boost their continuous improvement program. When we started to discuss with them, they were having many, many more ideas about how they would use this data that were centralized. They wanted dashboards, they wanted alert system, they wanted some prediction, they wanted to be able to feed other systems. So that's where, after a few months of operation or the first years, we discovered that there was an interest in transforming this horizontal approach on solving problem to a really larger scope is what can we do to support manufacturing operation with this platform. And that's where we started to really feel this early, you know, the stage of IoT. That means we could connect anything and we could use this to have many, many, many use cases. And what BrainCube decided to do is to build a suite of application, edge and cloud, that will cover the generic needs of the engineers and the production people. So we'll really help them to have easy made-by-click dashboards, data visualization, the first step of a problem-solving analysis. We have also statistical process control. So we have many apps like this that are really generic, and most of our customers, they really enjoy to do them. It delivers a lot of value. And then we build a second side in the platform, which is, okay, we cannot know that all the new ideas the people will have. So let's create a framework where we can develop any use cases based on the information we have inside BrainCube. And so we started to build kind of a low-code, no-code type of application where the customer can do like breaks. You know, they can make their own prediction and put the prediction into visualization and put this into a larger dashboard and so on and so on. So really today we have this, you come, you set up a platform, you start to use with our generic application, and you can build your own transformation journey by developing as many use cases as you want. And BrainCube support this because it will run for you all the new application you will build that would be your applications.
I see you're quite diversified in terms of the industries. You've remained focused on manufacturing, but you're covering discrete and process. It looks pretty comprehensive from your website, at least. What defines a good customer for BrainCube? What are the requirements of a customer in order to be able to, you know, extract real value from the solution?
You see, people sometimes split the industry between discrete manufacturing and continuous process industry. In our world, it's not exactly this. It's more automated industry versus manual industry. And when we don't go to the manual operations because they don't generate data. But everything that is automated with robots, automation layers, the control systems, and with traceability between operations, that's the typical customer. So we like mass production, we like automation, and we like a little bit of complexity. I mean, if it's very obvious, we can support the customer by having their performance KPIs live and stuff like this. But when the customers start to struggle because there is a level of complexity due to the volume, to do the pressure on cost, due to the complexity of controlling the processes, then BrainCube will deliver a tremendous value. We can have customers in a discrete manufacturing. If they manufacture products that are expensive enough, like tires or, for example, then it has a lot of value to work with them. And we go also in process industry where they generate such a big amount of data and they have interaction of parameters they don't even understand, where data can really show them sometimes why, but most of the time what to do. And the what to do is very important in manufacturing because you like to understand. But the first thing you need to do is to match your targets. And so the system is really supporting you in this decision-making process to be sure that you are wasting less and less opportunity to be at your best.
That's interesting. So it's not just visualizing the situation, but it's to some extent diagnosing or prescribing actions. But then I suppose there's a lot of intelligence from the operators that needs to be embedded in the machines. Or how do you then embed that insight into what, you know, what actions might make sense to do based on a given situation? Because that's, I think, hard to do from a kind of a pure horizontal platform.
The first way to improve a system is to observe the system. So visualization is still very interesting. And if you don't solve your problem with visualization, you will help to describe the problem better. And then you need to go on a deeper level, try to find the underlying interactions between parameters where it starts to be complex. What happened in a plant, it runs 24 hours. So what the people are doing, what the people are thinking, you know, all their action, all their reactions are inside their historical information. And we collect data from this machine, and from the raw data, we put this data into a context, which most of the time is what we try to recalculate the exact conditions of the manufacturing of every product. We call it the virtual twin of every product. And this is a level of information or what happened in the past, what decision was made, what any problem that occurred are engraved inside this level of information. So now we need to use learning technologies to learn what happened, what was good, what was bad, what we should consider of doing again, what we should not consider of doing again. And we can sort out from all this action that has been engraved into data, we can sort out what the plant should consider are the future way of running the operations. And so you see, we use the data, but we transform the data into a level of information that is ready to talk. And then we use learning technologies to make sure that we will grab maximum insights out of this level of information to answers to the people questions.
Okay, gotcha. And then you get into this very, very common challenge, which I imagine is even more of a challenge back in 2007 of serving the operations function, but having a solution that's, you know, cloud-based software that requires quite a high level of data analytics, you know, competence. And so then you have maybe the IT department or some other, maybe now might be kind of differently defined, but different functions that maybe have that technical competence. Who would be the typical users? I mean, I understand that operations is the customer here, but you know, who are going to be the users of this platform, given the complexity of the data involved?
We have two departments using BrainCube. The first one is the IT department, because when you do a project like this, in fact, you have to participate to a larger project, which is the company data project. We, with BrainCube, we focus on the manufacturing side of this data project. But every company today, they have a vision about how they want to deal with the data, their business data, their process data, their administration data, whatever data. So BrainCube is first working with IT, and we support their vision and we try to improve their vision and build with them a better architecture, at least, to serve our purpose, which will be a manufacturing optimization. And then IT, most of the time, they also need us, because when we set up this platform, one of the mission is to be able to develop on demand the application and the tool that doesn't exist on the market, but that has been recognized as critical or strategic for their operations. And it's part of their mission to use data scientists, or I would say suppliers that are dedicated for software development type of mission. And so we work with them because we bring them a lot of tools to support this mission. Then the other big department is the operation. So in the operation, we simplify it as three type of users. You have the managers, you have the technical staff, and you have the production people. So BrainCube, for every overview of the three type of users, we help them to save time and make better decision by leveraging their data. What does it mean? It means when you are production people, you need to have live information, live prediction, live recommendation, or simply we need to take over some of your decision. So we cover this, BrainCube. It's easy with BrainCube to use some of our modules to develop a prediction with auto machine learning type of technology to set up some different alerts. So we will cover the workshop with a screen that will help the people to have the right information at the right time or to have the right instruction at the right time. And we go up to, for some of the process, we go up to taking over the decision-making live by making an artificial intelligence system learning continuously and really taking over the most complex decision they have to make, like a multi-factor optimization. The technical staff is mostly working as a support. So what they need is prepare the future. So they will mostly use more big data application to make learnings that will help them to design the next step. How do we have to improve this equipment? Which equipment do we have to change? Which next technology would be valuable for us? So they really work on this as a support. Sometimes they do crime solving, but most of the time they do optimization for the future. And the managers, we help them to set up the dashboard at a detail level that help them to undercover opportunity for improvement that are not that clear when you just use your P&L, the profit and loss accountability type of results. That means today we can, for example, give them, if you are a tire company and you manufacture 15,000 tires a day with multiple models, you have an average cost per type of tires, maybe every day, which is already very good, sometimes every week, most of the time every month. With BrainCube, every tire has its exact own cost of manufacturing. So you will have some models with a lot of variation on the cost, and you need to understand something, and you will have some other models with low variability between the costs because the manufacturing is more stable, for example, because the way we do it is a better way. So we really help to go to this level of detail, and then they can task their staff team to go and use their experience, their knowledge, and today their data to try to make savings in all this potential that are most of the time unseen because we measure them as averages. And really, this is a game changer. We don't need average anymore. We need to really measure the exact variability of what is happening because that's where we can identify and value the project we should consider to make some improvements.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, I was just having a conversation with one of my team members today about the oven process in automotive OEM. You know, so you paint and then you go through a few ovens to dry the paint. And we were just thinking about, okay, this is apparently it consumes something like 60% of the energy in automotive OEM facility, this painting and drying process. And we were thinking, well, okay, they're probably applying some standard where they dry it for 5 minutes per vehicle. But if you actually, you know, could measure the readiness of a vehicle, you might find out that maybe it, you know, first of all, it should be lower. But second of all, you might find out that based on the different paint color and paint chemistry, some should be 4 minutes and 20 seconds instead of 5 minutes, but you're applying a standard. I think there's a lot of things like this that are simply hidden because you apply a standard and the standard tends to be at the top, you know, the high end of the distribution, because that gives you the safety margin. And that means there's a lot of these, you know, these efficiencies throughout an organization. And I suppose a solution like BrainCube can really start to let you get into these and operate at a much more granular level than you typically would based on, you know, the kind of the rules of thumb that you know, a lot of operators work by.
Yeah, you're totally right. And I know very well this example because BrainCube is covering some paint line in automotive for American car supplier and European car suppliers. So we have some experience on this, but it's exactly what you said. First, you can build, you know, the standard operating procedure. And I see them as the road. I mean, this is a road. You have margin, but your first job is to stay on the road, right? When you drive, but it's not the optimal trajectory, I would say. And so, what we are doing with BrainCube is really these two steps. I mean, we support the customer to get back on the road because sometimes they are out of the road. I mean, sometimes they don't understand that when they push too much this product on the station number 12, then there are a reaction on station number 36. Later, and they don't understand this. So we help them to set up the best average condition, and we can see at the new process window. Then, when we are in this, we already removed some of the crises, and we get back to the average. But if you want really to make more money, you need to optimize life. So that's where, from this big data analysis that helped us to set up this process window, the optimized process window, then we start to launch station by station or group of station by group of station algorithm running live. And that will adjust directly the parameters of we can adjust, the one we decided to adjust, replacing human decision. And we can do exactly what you said. That means we can pair paint, pair body, pair according to what happened in the manufacturing, the building, the painting of this. We can adjust the temperature of the oven. We can adjust the time the car should stay in to eliminate or reduce the risk of having small holes, changing color, a problem of layering, so stuff like this in the future. So that's exactly what we do. And we do it for many, many different processes. If you take paper industry, you know, you can imagine that you receive chips of wood that are coming from forest. Even if you get the same species of wood, you have the problem of the season, the problem of the weather, you have the problem of the storage, and you will process these fibers. And you will have to mix them with, most of the time today, recycled fibers coming from used paper. So your raw material by itself is already something that is, you know what you have, but you know the average of what you have. And so what's coming up into the head box of a paper machine, for example, it's a mix that is in average always the same, but it's pretty inconsistent when you look into details. And this small inconsistency is creating a nightmare if you are not the ability to adjust all the whitening agents, the retention aid agents, the stuff like this. So yes, we can run by habits. This is a whole time and say it's too complex and I don't improve. You can run by optimizing the average condition and it's already better, you are more stable. But if you want to be very performant, you need to go to the live adjustment. And I don't know anybody in this planet that can adjust live, you know, the perfect set points for several, I would say dozens and dozens of key inputs and different targets. It means probably 10, 20 quality, energy, and whatever targets. So the future is, and today we start to do it, is to have algorithms started to do it for you, to finding the best from the learning and creating new experiences that will help to enrich the learning experience. So yeah, and that's the magic of the factory of the future. That means we call it the smart factory. And they will be smart because they will be capable of reproducing the best decision in every condition, you know, 100% of the time, which human beings cannot guarantee. And we will let to the human all the rest, reaction to incident, a preparation of the next step, the new machines, the new technology, let the innovative mindset of the people building the future and what's current, the manufacturing, should be something that is becoming pretty obvious where we have to check, load, control, but not to decide and to set because it's becoming too complex.
Okay, interesting. If we dig into this example that you just provided about kind of, you know, raw material inputs into paper manufacturing, then in this case, you would need data also outside of the walls of your factory as well, right? So you'd want data ideally from the supplier, maybe from the weather system. So are these all data inputs somebody might be processing through BrainCube?
Yeah, that's the magic of internet, right? It's easy today, if people want to do it, to connect the suppliers. You know, let's say we're doing some packaging paper, which today is most of the volume in paper industry because, you know, all this transportation of goods, we need card boxes. So you are using recycled fibers. So with different grades and things, you are using wood, species of wood with also some variability. But also when you are manufacturing, for example, one of the glue you use is starch. And as you can imagine, starch is not a chemical product. It's a natural product. So you have a lot of variation and so on and so on. So you add variation from everywhere. So you can run and try to adapt without knowing the exact starch you are using today. But starch is costing you so much that every percent of starch is really making your profit, your benefit at the end of the month. So if you start to deal with your supplier, not only you will know the exact type of starch you are using now, but you can help to specify to this guy a starch that will cost less and will be more efficient for you. So by teaming up the chain of the suppliers, you make a giant process line and you open the opportunities for improvement. I have another story out of paper for this. You know, we were at the French giant airplane manufacturer, and you might know who are these guys, but they were starting a new model of plane. And to do this, you know, they are always fighting against the weight and stuff. So they were using some new metal, a metal that has been invented, designed, engineered for this plane. So as you can imagine, nobody has any experiences in how this metal will be made, manufactured, will it be easy or not. And so the customer was complaining about quality problem at the end of the machining when the part was ready to be assembled. There was some strange behavior of the material. Okay, so they were not looking inside their plant. What they were doing, they were complaining about the supplier. And the supplier was the forge. They were preparing the metal. They were not the foundry. So what they said, they complained at the foundry and to their own supplier. So we had a chain of three companies, one foundry, one forge, and one machining company at the final customer. And so they were fighting. They were fighting for months. It's your fault. No, blah, blah, blah. I respect my specification. So when we were a supplier, one of them, the middle company. And so this guy had the idea to say, what if we do something where there's no guilty, but we bring all the information we get from the beginning of the line to the end of the line, and we cross them. And we see if we can, as one team, we can solve this problem. And what happened? They were right. There were no guilty. That means everybody could adjust something in the process, and everybody understood why, that we totally master the manufacturing of this new metal, and the problem completely disappeared. And what takes the longer time in this was to set up agreement between lawyers to be able to do it. Took a few weeks to do this, and it took a few days to solve the problem. So you see, the future, I'm optimistic, will be that company will decide to collaborate because in their best interest, they will make more profit by being optimized altogether than trying to secure their position with specification that costs money for everybody. And we are having more and more chance to link the different actors in manufacturing for many reasons. It can be quality reasons, but it can be also supplying reason. Before, you need this famous starch and you consume a lot, but your paper production depends on the grades. So you will use plus or minus starch depending on what paper you're manufacturing. And sometimes you have some downtime, shutdowns. You can have many things that slow down your production. Okay, so the starch company has to be aligned with you to make sure you will never have any shortages, or you will never have too many starch coming in the plant and you don't know what to do with all these trucks. So with IoT and using internet, you can easily set up a dashboard where they know exactly the consumption live of starch at their customers, and they know exactly the number of trucks they will have to ship the next day to make sure they match the exact demand. And really, it changed the relationship. There is no more, you know, document in between and waiting for agreements and things. So, well, I think this is the future of IoT, is connecting everything in the plant and everything between the different actors with the same ambition of being fair, being optimized, making the things easier, smoother.
Yeah, you're right. Your point around the fact that it takes the lawyers three times as long to come to an agreement as it takes to find the solution is an interesting point as well, right? Because there's also the potential to develop much stronger bonds, right, between a supplier and a customer. If you have this system set up and you know that your supply chain is optimized for this customer, it's less likely that the customer is going to be shopping around for other suppliers because you've already invested the time to optimize for them, and your customer is getting a better performance here, right? So I think this can also be strategically used to kind of build stronger relationships.
I totally agree with this. I mean, it's always hard for a human being to change of a model. You know, there was a model of protective models, and today there is a collaborative model. So it's hard for some people to change their mind. But what happened in this project is, first, you know, everybody was fighting. Then they tried to unify. When they unified, they solved the problem. And we had an award for this in the company, because it was the top management discovered that it's possible to do this. So I think we are at the early stages of this, because people will realize that manufacturing is just a chain. And if we want to be good, we have to make this chain, again, as open as possible. I'm not saying that any one of them share their knowledge, their secret sauce, and whatever. They didn't do this, because everybody could process data, and you know, you can anonymize your colleague data. You can run and you can tell them, okay, factor number 12 and factor number 47, output pick up very seriously. And they will deal with this and we'll come back to you and say, okay, we can control it on the next level, or there's something we don't really control. But you see, you don't even have to know what exactly happening. You just need to finger point the thing that it should look at, and it saves so much time to everybody. And if everybody agrees to make the little efforts, the result is so big.
Great. Well, let's break down the tech here a little bit. I'm curious, actually, whether BrainCube is a single solution or a portfolio. If I'm looking on your website, you have the IoT platform, then you have cloud and edge broken out separately, and then a cloud plus edge. You have digital twin, and then you have advanced apps. Are these all separate products, or are these basically, let's say, functions or architectures for the same product? How do you look at the portfolio?
We have a lot of tools and apps inside BrainCube, because our ambition is to enter into the architecture of the customer. So we need to adapt depending what they already have as data collection, as cybersecurity, storage, and things. So we have plenty of opportunity to adapt. So we have a portfolio of solutions. Some are end users application, some are middlewares, some are tools, connectors, and we have servers for the platform. So what we do is we have a first experience with the customer, which is, can we make a proof of concept, a proof of value quickly? So we set up a pilot, and we dedicate a team on a first use case, and we try to make it, you know, easy for everybody. And we know how to do this with BrainCube, because we can quickly set up things that will compensate the lack of sometimes of what the customer could should have or they didn't have. Okay, so when we have this value demonstrated and we have this excitement where we tell, okay, we need to build new use cases and we need to roll out the first use cases, then we have these few days of discussion with IT where we build the final architecture and we build the rollout plan and the plan of qualification of the next use cases. So BrainCube was a single monolithic type of software probably in 2008, 9, and 10. Then it became 2, 3, 4, 5 software solution, one for life purposes, one for big data purposes. And today it's not anymore. It's more, you have to see that as services, servers, tools, connectors, and for sure the final application, which can be middleware or end user application. So we have this probably very unique opportunity to adapt to any IT architecture situation, and then we can deliver what we know, our apps and our frameworks for developing any use cases very, very quickly. That's what the customer, I think, enjoy the most, the speed for delivering value.
Makes sense. And then this is, I suppose, it's sold as a SaaS offering, maybe with some services around training and implementation. Is that the underlying business model?
So it was you know, kind of subscription and pro services. But today, when we discuss with our customer, we understand that everybody has his own pace of transformation. So what they want is more and more a business model that helps to scale with their own expectations. So today you have some subscriptions in BrainTube. You have subscription on platform, subscription on a package of apps. But we are having also per instances type of, that means if the guy is using OE, a solution that has been designed exactly according to what he wants and he's using two machines today, 20 machines next month, and 200 machines the month after. So we have this model where we can grow with them. And it's the same for, so we have some pair users, we have some pair license, we have some also, we can have some profit sharing. Imagine you set up an autonomous decision making on a complex process and you save $1 million a month on this. You know, for us, it's an experience where we need to go understand what needs to be done. So I need to read doctors coming there and setting up the algorithm of learning. But when this is achieved, then we deliver tremendous value, and so we can do some profit sharing. I mean, since the customer is not totally convinced at the beginning that it will work, we can come and go, show them what we can do, and if it's profitable, then they are happy. So we have more and more offering that becomes scalable to make sure that the customer is always paying for what he is really using. And that also was a change, because before it was like any SaaS offering, we had one solution, one SaaS price according to few parameters like your size, the number of variables, storage, whatever. And today we are capable of really adjusting the offer to the exact need of the customer. And if they grow, then the system will grow with them, but the costs are known. And if they back down a little bit because they sell a plant or whatever, their costs go down. So we try to be as flexible as possible in this.
Okay, yeah, that's fascinating. I mean, one of the most interesting things about IoT platforms is the visibility around the data. It gives you the ability to be very creative in terms of the business model. But I think most companies are really not fully exploring the possibilities right now, right? They tend to align on one or two models and stick to that. You know, it's similar to, you know, this topic of optimization, right? So they, you know, people apply an average and they say, okay, in general, this model works on average best. But like you said, you can apply the same principles of optimization to pricing and say, yes, okay, there's an average that works best, but we have 100 different customers and there might be 100 different solutions for the right pricing model for those customers. And yeah, it sounds like you're actually able to kind of explore that problem space and be quite creative.
I see you understand exactly what we want to achieve. That means we want this flexibility because it makes sense. I mean, you know, manufacturing is all about waste, okay? You need to control your process, make sure you don't waste. You don't waste time of people. You don't waste anything you purchase. You don't waste opportunity of producing more, blah, blah, blah. Okay, so when you set up a system and you say you will pay this fixed amount of price and it's all included, at the beginning, the people are using a percentage of the system, okay? And so they are frustrated about, yeah, why am I supposed to pay more? We are in this life today, in this community today, where we like to pay on demand. We like to pay per usage. We like to pay sometimes per value. I mean, you get me the value and I share the value. So I think we understand this more and more. And we have a catalog of offering where some of our solutions have a different pricing model. And most of them have one pricing model, which is intended to be as scalable as possible, so to never waste any pennies of our customers. And some might have multiple pricing models because it might be super different to be in a place where you have one large production line versus another plant where you have 500 similar equipment running in parallels. So we understand this more and more. We work with our customer. We answer to a lot of requests for quotation. And yes, our technology has really some advanced points and people come to us because they want to have our 12, 14 years of experience in what we do. Yes, we have a team of guys that are coming from manufacturing and that really team up with the customer. They really understand their needs. But also, we want to make sure that we grow as a partner inside their organization at the same speed they grow their transformation project. And we like it very much.
Yeah, great. Well, Laurent, you've built really a great company here, and I can tell that you're still very much actively iterating and improving as you go. I think we've covered, I'd say, a good bit of the business here. Anything that we haven't touched on yet that's important for the listeners to understand?
I think the most important things we learn about this 14 years is do anything really impressive only thinking about technology. And it's all about taking the time to build a vision where you want to go. And from this vision, there will be different strategy to achieve the vision with many risks or not. And that's where they should start to call us and just say, okay, that's what I have. That's my dream. How do I go there? When we start to discuss this with customers, the roadmap and the milestone we can set up are giving us really great achievements. It's cheaper, it's faster, everybody understands what we are doing, and it's also super flexible, because if your ambition change, then you are super excited about this. You can, you know, decide to go faster, bigger. Or if you think your people have a hard time to accept some of the newest technology that makes sense, but there might be socially difficult to accept, you can step up a little bit, make some things that more easier for the people to accept, and try to make sure you won't lose anybody on this transformation journey. So always start with the vision. And if you don't know how to build this vision, that's okay. We can spend time with you. We sell technology, but at the end, we achieve transformation. And that's really, I think, the brand new mission, to transform industry to eliminate waste.
Laurent, that's a great closing thought. If there are some folks in our audience who are interested in meeting BrainCube and exploring how they can work together, what's the best way for them to get in touch with your team?
So we have organization in Europe, in North America, and South America. You go on our website and you have emails, you have telephone numbers, you contact us on LinkedIn or whatever. We are very active. We have a team of business representatives that will answer to you. And anybody who wants to directly talk to me, talk to any member of our team, because they think we might be valuable in some thinking they have. Today, it's so easy with all this platform we have. So never hesitate. There are so many ways to contact us anyway.
Thank you for your time today.
Thank you very much, Eric. It was a pleasure.
Thanks for tuning into another edition of the IoT Spotlight podcast. If you find these conversations valuable, please leave us a comment and a 5-star review. And if you'd like to share your company's story or recommend a speaker, please email us at team@iot1.com. Finally, if you have an IoT research, strategy, or training initiative that you would like to discuss, you can email me directly at erik.walenza@iot1.com. Thank you.